Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. I hope you're enjoying the coverage. Always something different and challenging, and we will continue always to be able to bring you the best information, the best facts that are out there. And if that goes against a narrative, well, so be it. That's the whole purpose of what we're doing, showing you that the narrative, therefore, that's often peddled by mainstream media, not always the truth, as we've come to know. And when you look at the Chinese statistics, goodness me, I mean, we're dealing in complete made-up territory now. And Stephen Mosh, if there's one person that knows what's going on, it is him, and that book, The Devil and Communist China. What a great read it is. Now, just to bring you some more updated information, what we're learning out of with Iran and Israel is that there were air raid sirens and explosions heard in cities across Israel, including Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, as Israeli, US, UK and Jordanian forces have shot down missiles and drones launched from Iran. Tehran said it carried out the attack in response to the Israeli raid on the Iranian consulate in Syria and says the matter can now be deemed concluded. Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps said it fired dozens of missiles at Israeli targets in retaliation for that attack on April 1. Its military response marked its first direct attack on Israeli territory and began on Saturday night at around 8 o'clock in Greenwich Mean Time. Explosions were heard in cities across Israel, Tel Aviv, West Jerusalem, with air raid sirens in more than 720 locations as the Israeli forces sought to shoot down the Iranian projectiles. The Israeli military said Iran launched more than 200 killer drones. Daniel Hagari, the spokesman for the military, said a girl was wounded in the attack. There were no reports of fatalities. Israel's Home Front Command lifted its order for Israelis to stay near bomb shelters in the early hours of Sunday at around midnight GMT. Now, with the attack, Iran's mission to the UN said it considered the matter of Israel's raid on its consulate in Syria concluded and warned of a considerably more severe response should the Israeli regime make another mistake. UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting requested by Israel at 4 p.m. New York time on Sunday. Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and Israel temporarily have closed their airspace while several aeroplanes suspended flights in the region. Well, if Iran is saying that it's now concluded its response, therefore, now we wait to see what happens in terms of a tit for tat. Given Israel went first and Iran has retaliated, it will be interesting for us here in the West to observe how this is reported in the mainstream, therefore, to whether they're going to justify which side goes next. But we all know that tit for tat, you know, an eye for an eye means that everyone ends up blind. And this is the problem that we have now, is that we're watching and being manipulated in real time. And it's very interesting as we're just working to get our next guest on the phone, Ralph Epperson. And I'm hoping that we've got sorted through any technical difficulties there. But it's interesting because Ralph's coverage today is all about what he has predicted over some time and written a number of different books on the subject, from The Unseen Hand to The New World Order, and even looking at Freemasonry. And this is work that's been conducted, you know, from the 70s and 80s and up until today. So this is not just yesterday discovering this, but over a lifetime. And of course, the pathway always ends up where we are, with forced wars, false flags, justification to manipulate the population, and it goes on and on and on. And it doesn't seem to be, as we talked about yesterday on the show with Dave Hodges, you can't just pick a side anymore. You can't just say I'm from America or I'm from China or from Russia, and that's just the way it is. Seems you've got to keep a scorecard against whatever is going on in the world to see what's actually happening that makes sense, that we're not being manipulated one way or another. And if all roads tend to lead to humans losing their freedoms, and what is life if we can't choose for ourselves the difference between right and wrong and are told what to do, then what are we? What is the purpose of life on earth for an individual born to believe and be told that we have free will, only for said free will to be taken away from us? It just doesn't make any sense. What are we? And why is it, even when we examine a country like China, communist China, therefore, that everything must serve the party, even capitalism and wealth, then if it really is a flat platform that everyone shares in the spoils equally or are meant to, why then do the rule makers separate themselves? Why do they get to be different from the rest of us and have access to all these things that all of us should be entitled to based on a system of freedom and free will and the ability to be an entrepreneur and to follow what you, one person, would like to do with their lives. Why is it that this is taken away from us? And why is it that so many cultures around the world exist this ridiculous way where no matter what happens at some point in history, our freedoms are taken away and the spoils of our work taken away? It's just a shocking, shocking scenario that we somehow think that we have to be subservient to government. I mean, what is government? For the people, by the people. Why is it then that the governments get into power and that is no longer real anymore, that we become, as I said, subservient? But it almost feels like we are vermin now, to be eradicated, to be treated in ways that are just against anything that we believe in. Is it any wonder, therefore, that when you look at it from a spiritual perspective, why are all communists atheists? Am I generalizing? Or is this a pattern? Why is it that so many people today, in times of absolute tyranny, rediscover their spiritual connections and start making inquiry and going back to houses of worship, going to pick up a Bible and reading it? I mean, the word Bible has been taboo for most of my lifetime. If you brought it up, you were sort of laughed out of the room. It's just an odd scenario in what's going on. So we consider the craziness that's happening and wonder, therefore, that if that's the only side that you can pick to put your faith in a higher power in these times of tyranny, or is it something else that's coming? But generally what happens in a narrative is there's a dominant prevailing narrative, and we've seen it in the West. It was COVID, and then immediately when they just couldn't squeeze any more blood out of that stone, they immediately switched to climate change. When I say they, I'm talking about the globalist agenda, this unseen hand. And I find this all very, very interesting, the way that this is leading into our conversation that we're going to have with Ralph Epperson in a moment. I'm just waiting for word that we've got Ralph available. We might go to an early break, in fact, and come back, but I'll just wait for word to see what's going on, because I just find it riveting, fascinating with what's happening around the world. And then, of course, you look at it and you wonder how many of these events are manufactured events, false flags. We talk about Franz Ferdinand, the beginning of World War I. We talk about Pearl Harbor as perhaps a false flag to get the US into World War II. We talk about 9/11 as perhaps a false flag to get the weapons of mass destruction and to attack Iraq, possibly after the failure of George H.W. Bush. What can we believe anymore? And how many times do we have to be told a lie by power before we say no more? We reject power, and that's something else that is another point in turn here as we watch what's happening. So we're clearly seeing the Iran-Israel conflict, and we'll bring more information as we get it, and I'm sure that you're watching to see what's happening. But one must ask the questions behind: who is pulling the strings and for what benefit and to whose? Because it certainly doesn't seem like it's ours for our benefit. We've only got to look at the era past COVID. Interest rates in Australia are up 13 times. The price of food around the world, everywhere, increasing. Inflation everywhere. Walk into a supermarket, something you paid a couple of dollars for almost doubles. Just in my local Aldi supermarket, the price of butter went from $2.50 to $6.29 over a period of 2 years. I mean, that's not nothing, is it? The price of bread, the price of basic staples increasing, the price of fuel, price of motor vehicles. Goodness me, I don't know how anyone can afford an electric vehicle that you're supposed to buy. I've seen advertising in my local social media at the local car dealer here selling a Kia EV GT, a little hatchback, an electric vehicle on sale at $105,000 Australian for a motor vehicle. I don't know who can afford to spend that much money on a car that maybe in a couple of years' time you're lucky to get $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 back for. Who can rip up money the way that this is going on? It's an extraordinary scenario. that we're seeing here. And as I've liked to talk about in many times, when you reflect on the scenario, and for those of us who look at the government of the day and realise or believe that they're doing us some sort of service, and then ask, what was the last great thing that government actually did to build the nation, as opposed to divide it or to provide an excuse as to why things can't go on? And then the handing out of various different band-aids, if you will, when certain disasters happen, seems to be that all we can get out of it. And yet when you see a disaster like what we saw yesterday in Bondi Junction here in Sydney, and of course it's always the human beings, the people, the average people in the street that will run to the rescue of others and be the real first responders in that case. And we've seen stories on media of the of people, you know, rendering service to others that were stabbed and bleeding out whilst they wait for the officials to arrive. But that's the real culture of people that we've all known in our, especially here in Australia, and as you would in other countries around the world. When it gets down to it, people know how to look after themselves and others and respect human life in the suffering and this manipulation that continues to go on against us is something that is just anti-human. And when it comes from the system, the government itself, then you start to realize that, hey, this is not what we want. And therefore, maybe what we're watching right now is part of what we've determined for some time, may well be the Great Awakening. And it seems that that's really what it is. I think what we'll do is we'll take a break and we'll see if Ralph's ready on the other side. There is so much going on. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends with Jason Olborn here on TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
Do you think conspiratorial about it? Do you think that there's a depopulation agenda attached to it? Do you think people just have a death urge? Why do you think people don't wake up from this?
Well, they don't wake up because it's poison, and that's one reason. But I think that the border issue is a good topic. You know, I'm in San Diego. 97,000 people cross our border every single day. And at the end of the day, according to the Border Patrol and Homeland Security, only 2 or 3% of the vehicles or the people are detained, stopped, or interviewed.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back to Weekends. And of course, as we reflect on what's happened in Bondi Junction, we've learnt of the some of the names of the victims, and very disturbing, of course, that, two beautiful young ladies whose lives were stolen from them were announced earlier. Ash Good, the mother of the 9-year-old, little baby that was also stabbed. It's something that one cannot fathom, this particular disaster. And, of course, we've also learnt of the daughter of John Singleton, Dawn Singleton, 25, who lost her life in the Bondi stabbing as well. Absolutely disgusting situation that we know there. Now, the Singleton family is well known across Australia, particularly in the eastern suburbs. A large family, lots of kids, lots of wives, of course, for John as well. But it doesn't matter how well known or how wealthy you are, this is a scenario that no one deserves. No one really can recover from such a thing. It is something that changes everyone's lives profoundly. It is just the most revolting of all scenarios. And we've also learned that a security guard on duty was another victim of the attacks as well. And we'll find out more information there. You just can't fathom it. And of course, here in Australia, I mean, these events are, you know, relatively rare. And when we, of course, report on what's happening in the United States, we do so in a way that we kind of have a little bit of distance, and you have to put on you are cold to a scenario because it doesn't affect you. But this is the point, isn't it? That when these events get close to home, that's when it really, really sticks in and digs in, and you just can't imagine that this could happen to anyone, certainly not someone that you know or to one's own family. It's just something else that we look at and just think, wow. How do we even get ourselves off the mat and get up tomorrow and get back and take life seriously? The idea of having to meet a deadline for a job or something like that, it just doesn't really make much sense, does it? And so it is. And Westfield at Bondi obviously remaining closed at this stage. So the amount of business, well, what does that even matter at this point, one would say, but when you're watching what's going on. But this other interesting story, of course, is that the killer, this Joel Cauchy, 40. I mean, people may well have seen pictures of Joel in the newspaper. Cauchy, speaks next to his surfboard, these particular Facebook posts asking to meet up with people, to make friends, having moved down from Queensland. All of it just seems odd, certainly in the modern world with digital technology. I mean, why not go on a dating site, for example, or something else to where you are supposed to meet people, for example? I mean, who actually puts out as posts on social media randomly to meet people? So these are the things that will be explored in the times to come. Another quick comment I just want to make in terms of speculation, and I'm as guilty as anyone of being a speculator on social media from the point of view of asking questions. It's one thing to sort of make a statement, but to ask questions is reasonable. But putting posts up on social media, blaming someone there, look, there's Alex in the background. We're just getting him ready to come on in a moment. It looks like Ralph hasn't been able to join us today, but we're going to get Alex on in just a second. But the point I wanted to make there in terms of this is just be really careful when you're posting on your social media. I noticed today someone was in a hurry to get out the killer's name and got the spelling of the surname wrong. Well, that's a fatal mistake, isn't it, to put the wrong person's name up. There was a young man, a 20-year-old man, who was wrongly accused yesterday of being the killer, a 20-year-old man in the eastern suburbs, people sort of sharing that on social media. And this is a good point for all of us. Yes, we can be good citizen journalists, but it just tells us that we must check our facts. Just to get the first story out there is meaningless if you get it wrong. It's not about that. It's about getting things right in the first instance. So that's a really important message for us. Well, I'm going to introduce you now. We're going to change pace, and I think we need to lighten it up a little bit, but we are going to talk about some serious topics. But Alex, who is our tech man, and you've probably seen his shows on Saturday, they're terrific. He is just standing by to join us right now. Alex, are you there? Let's come bring you in.
Yes, absolutely. I'm here.
Beautiful. Good to see you, Alex, and thank you for joining me on the show at short notice. We just had a difficult situation. My guests have contacted me today asking if they were still required, which I said that they were. But they're obviously watching what's happening in Iran and Israel and in Bondi and just expecting that their subject matter might not be relevant. But everything is relevant at this stage. And if anything, I think that we need to create balance in these times. And the reason I say that is that when I remember watching the events of 9/11, goodness me, 23 years ago almost now, and I just finished watching an episode of The West Wing, which I think was probably my favourite ever TV show, and it finished, and there on Channel 9 News, I'll never forget it, Jim Whaley giving an update and showing the first plane hitting the towers, and I was shocked, and then it was only minutes later before we saw another plane hit the towers, and I just remember spending 24 hours glued to the TV screen, not saying a single word, just absorbing what's going on, and these stories are similar. But it's not on the same scale, and they're very personal, and people will be, you know, be very disturbed. But to relive it on mainstream news, you know, every 5 minutes another story, another recycling that story, it just bombards and almost becoming desensitized. But I think it's valuable that we can talk about them, but then distract ourselves and discuss other issues that we do still face on a day-to-day basis. But perhaps I can ask you, Alex, what your thoughts are for firstly what happened at Bondi yesterday.
Well, it's obviously been horrific. I mean, I've been following the news both on television and on TNT and on X or Twitter as well. I saw last night and this morning that people were calling for the name. They had the incorrect name. I've already seen the post from the father of the Jewish person that was falsely accused. And the guy's saying, you know, we've got to get this name off because it's incorrect. And then we saw this morning the name of the actual killer, and apparently he's from Queensland. He moved here a month ago. He's been sleeping rough. He had some sort of a storage unit, and we still don't know too much about it. I mean, I've been watching the news myself this morning and hearing things as they were happening. The Premier gave a statement. The police commissioner also spoke as well. And look, it's just a terrible tragedy. I mean, to see the vision of what was happening in Westfield and to hear the alarms blaring and to hear the stories of the people that actually saw this person right there, and the bollard man who was on top of the escalator as the attacker was actually coming up the moving escalator that was going down. Very strange. Obviously, it's a terrible tragedy. I mean, thank goodness it at this stage it's not to do with any particular ideological terrorism that we keep being told that. I mean, we still don't know honestly if that's the case or not. But it does appear that this is a mental health issue, and it shines a light on the mental health issues that are so prevalent in the world today. I mean, we know that. Eating a bad diet with all sorts of too much sugar and too many of the bad things that we have is not very good for the health of the brain. And we see the obesity crisis in the US. And in the US, you have many artificial colors and dyes and things that are banned in other parts of the world. I mean, just have a look at the back of a packet of M&Ms, peanut M&Ms, for example. If you look at the Australian ones, they don't have the artificial colorings and flavorings they do in the US. Why that's allowed, I don't know. I'm sure that causes a lot of mental health issues as well. But that, of course, is not the case in Australia, where a lot of those things are banned. But look, terrible, terrible situation. The huge number of flowers now appearing at the front of the Westfield Bondi Junction, and that's obviously going to continue to consume people's grief and attention for the coming days.
Isn't it interesting when you have the grieving now in the general public, certainly here in Australia? We saw it, of course, with Princess Diana, but that how it profoundly affects people to go and purchase, one would assume, a bunch of flowers and make the effort, a pilgrimage, if you will, to the building there at the Westfield, which is a massive shopping centre in Bondi Junction in the eastern suburbs, for those that don't know it. To make that effort, and this is a sign of genuine community. It's the real humanity behind the story. One only realizes why it is that when we don't have a situation of like this, that we all sort of get a bit jaded by society and we get on with our lives. But it just takes a real tragedy for people to become human again or to find their humanity. It's a horrible thing to say, but it's just that imbalance, I think, that within that, but somehow the goodness of humanity comes out in the end, despite this everlasting tragedy that people will have to suffer with. I mean, it is just heartbreaking at every single turn. Alex, it's just one of those things, isn't it, that we look at? I mean, when we're watching even mainstream news, that people, I was watching Carl this morning and he was stumbling with his words, and his questioning was probably not the best that he could do. But what do you do in these situations where people are just trying to find their footing? We're talking about Bondi. There's not one person, I don't think, in New South Wales, for example, that doesn't know someone who comes from Bondi. As an example, this is the significance. I mean, around the world, everyone knows of Bondi Beach. For those that don't know, Bondi Beach and Bondi Junction are separated by a few kilometres, but there's that connection down famous Bondi Road that many people would have travelled upon that links the two. But Bondi Junction is virtually its own metropolis now. It's an incredible high-rise miniature city, only 5 minutes drive from the Sydney CBD. And so it's filled with incredibly valuable property, real estate, etc., very densely populated. I mean, it is literally the heart of the eastern suburbs and the home of the Sydney Roosters football team, as an example, just to provide perspective for those that are watching around the world and realizing why we are so damaged and bruised here in Australia today, Alex.
Absolutely. Look, it's one of the areas where the Sydney train system actually terminates. They wanted to build it down to the beach. Sadly, they never did that. But yeah, it's a metropolis. I mean, I have been to that Westfield Bondi. It's relatively new. It's one of the most impressive Westfield shopping centres probably in the world. And it would have been packed. I've seen the vision. It was certainly packed on the day. And I mean, it's a little bit like an attack happening in Times Square in New York. I mean, it wasn't right in the CBD of Sydney, but this is one of the major centres, just a kilometre or so from Bondi Beach. We know that a couple of the victims were foreigners that were visiting Australia and don't even know if their families have yet been contacted. Already the government is offering mental health and counseling services that will be available on an ongoing basis. But yeah, this is right in the heart of, you know, many people's suburban life. I mean, it's a very wealthy area. People flock to it. And I mean, a terrible, terrible situation, a terrible target. I mean, look, any target in Australia would be obviously terrible, but this was quite tragic. And I mean, it defies belief that it's happened. And this morning when I was watching the news, there were people still in shock, as you can imagine, you know, various witnesses being interviewed on the various news services. And just I've been glued to it all morning as well, listening to it, you know, to the in my ears, I'm doing other work, but just glued basically to what's going on, and just marveling, why is this happening in Australia? And people are lost for words.
Now, Alex, to relate it to your area of expertise, and I think it's important now that we explore what might happen in Australia as a result of this. We obviously have a knee-jerk reaction that seems to be inevitable in politics, reactionary approaches to it. There will be demands, of course, that people in the situation to prevent what happened. And so one might look at it from a mental health approach, which is an assumption at this point. I mean, yes, there's a mental health, you know, blanket here. Anyone who kills anyone, it's an irrational act. So it must be assumed in the first instance that this is the case. Of course, they'll be talking about weapons. There was talking on one of his social media posts that he was looking to meet up with people who liked shooting guns, and a comment from someone who obviously got in after the fact and said that something along the lines of, thank God we don't have guns in this country. But where I'm going with this is in terms of technology. I mean, Australia virtually has no real weapons, except as we've seen, anyone can grab a knife. But do you think that there might be calls now to use technology as a way to somehow attempt to prevent something like this in the future? Is this even feasible? Have you had time to even reflect on such an idea?
Well, it comes down to profiling, and it comes down to how AI is going to be used to look at people as they're walking into various shopping centres or areas and make a determination, almost like the pre-crime determination from the movie Minority Report. Could this be a person of concern? Should we have security, you know, immediately start to investigate and tell this person? But the problem is that, you know, this, based on the video and the images that I've seen so far, you know, just taking one look at this person, he was wearing a grinning gold football jersey and didn't look like an Islamic terrorist, or it didn't look like any kind of concern. I mean, the social media posts that have been shared on the media today talked about him surfing, wanting to find a Swedish person to learn Swedish with and have discussions. And I mean, I hadn't seen the reports of him wanting to go and shooting with people, but which is legal to do in gun clubs. I hear ads on Canberra Radio, where I am, that state that shooting is a perfectly legal pastime, obviously at shooting clubs or in the country areas. You know, you can do that, but clearly we don't have the carry laws that they have in the US. And they're manned in many places. But there will be obviously a push to have AI try and you know, look at people. But we already had that sort of thing happening in various stadiums around the world. And the problem is just the volume of people. There are just too many people out there. It's too easy to look just like an everyday, just to blend in. So I don't know what technology can sort of do in the short term. No doubt there will be tweaking of algorithms to try and pinpoint people who are acting weirdly on social media, whether it's on X or on Facebook or Instagram. And no doubt that's been happening for a long time. We've had a number of massacres around the world. This is not the first time that this sort of thing has happened. And often people are much more expressive on social media. I mean, part of the thing is that if this person was known to police, I saw a post about this from Alexandra Marshall, if this person was known to police and known to have mental health issues, then why is this person allowed to roam the streets and be a potential threat? I mean, I see plenty of calls on X to bring back mental asylums. I mean, why are people just simply allowed to roam around? There was another post that said, you know, jewelers used to be armed. Various people used to be armed for their own safety in decades past, and that has now all gone away. I mean, should Westfield security guards be armed? There are some security guards who are allowed to be armed. Most of them obviously are not, but this may turn the tide back towards there being some more, you know, judicious choices about who should be armed in society, so that should this sort of thing happen, it can be much more quickly dealt with. You don't have to wait for a police officer to turn up. I mean, in the States, we often have reports of massacres at schools. And I remember there was one particular massacre, would have been a couple of years before the pandemic. And I was watching Glenn Beck in the States, and he, you know, he's very pro Second Amendment, pro weapons in America, because they have that as part of the Constitution. And he made the point at the time that this particular massacre was not dwelled upon for days and weeks, for a very simple reason. There was an armed security guard in that school who was able to take down the school shooter very quickly. And so it didn't turn into this extended killing spree, whether by gun or by weapons. And we may need to have a look at, you know, carefully and making sure people are properly screened, rearming individuals. I mean, we talk about AI and technology. Well, we have the technology. It's called a gun. We have AI. It's called individuals, organic intelligence. You know, they're the best people to actually be on the spot, be in the moment. And I mean, we know that a couple of the people who were killed yesterday were actual Westfield security people. Now, had they been armed, obviously, once again, you know, had the proper training and, you know, were able to have arms safely and perhaps store them at work and not take them home, and you know, make sure all those particular boxes are crossed and all the dots and, you know, T's and dots and everything is tickety-boo sort of thing in that regard. Well, that would stop a lot of these sorts of incidents from happening in the future, or at least and it would let people know that, hey, if you're going to do this sort of thing, please do not come to a shopping center because people are armed and waiting for you to see if you're going to misbehave, you'll be dealt with.
You know, years ago, I traveled to Israel on part of a world tour, and I was lucky enough to be able to stay with a couple of my friends who I went to school with in Sydney, who'd since moved over. And I took a trip on one of these occasions to the Wailing Wall, and I stood at the wall and just admired the history there. The first thing I noticed was all these little bits of paper that were rolled up and shoved into the crevices between the stones. And it turned out that they were prayers. And I thought that was an unusual scenario, that that's what people did. Then I looked to my left and looked to my right, and I noticed an Orthodox Jewish man praying. And I also noticed that he carried a pistol on his hip that was not concealed. It was right there out in the open. And it kind of shocked me for a moment. And I took a step back and took a breath and thought, am I safe? And of course I was. But it wasn't until I had a conversation with my friend sometime later and asked him what he felt and how I felt about that situation. And he looked at me and he laughed. And I said, what are you laughing at? He says, what are you talking about? He says, every single person in Israel serves at least 2 years in the military and spends a certain amount of time every year in the reserve from that moment. He said, who better to have a gun and carry than somebody who has that level of training? Now, one might fast forward and criticize Israeli behavior going forward, but on an individual micro level, he's exactly right. And if we only limited it to having in major shopping centers or railway stations or something like that, and of course, this is just putting it out there from the purpose of debate, would we be safer if certain people, like you said, the old jeweler back in the day, being able to carry a weapon for his or her own protection? This would be the point. And I just put it out there, Alex, to maybe get your perspective, if you think that at the very least, should we be having a debate about these topics, or should we be considering other approaches than just disarming everyone, except for the, as my mother would say, it only stops the honest criminals, but not the dishonest ones.
Yeah, look, absolutely. There's a famous saying, which I've said on Twitter a number of times, and you have all the anti-gun types that rail against it, but an armed society is a polite society. You do not hear of major mass murders happening in Switzerland because they're taught about weapons from a very early age. And you also don't hear about mass murders in Singapore. There's, like in Israel, there's mandatory military service. I mean, there is a case for that to be brought back to Australia. I mean, I guess I'm glad I didn't go through it, but then I don't have any weapons training. And, you know, if you ever see a gun sort of out there, you sort of think of Bruce Willis movies. But it's good to have this sort of training. And again, an armed society is a polite society. If someone's going to start shooting people, everybody else that's armed is going to be able to deal with the situation very quickly. And if you want to see open carry weapons somewhere in Australia, I live in Canberra, the national capital of Australia, the equivalent of Washington, D.C. Now, you only have to drive around Parliament House, which is in the Parliamentary Triangle. I'm in Yarralumla, very close to that. It's a, you know, 2 or 3 minute drive away, and patrolling around, you see police with semi-automatic weapons. Every time I travel to the Canberra airport, very, you know, visibly, you see a number of police with carrying these, you know, semi-automatic weapons. I mean, not just pistols, but actually the military style weapons. I mean, they're sending a very strong message that they're not going to put up with any kind of misbehavior, and it's right there in the open. So you know, you don't see that in Sydney. You don't see it. I haven't seen it in other parts, in other airports in Australia. So you know, in Canberra, they don't muck around. It's always the politicians who can break the rules, have all the armed guards. You know, that was a politician in the US talking about how safe it was, Pete Buttigieg, how safe it was in Washington D.C. He can take his dogs for a walk, and of course, Washington D.C. is rife with crime at the moment, and people immediately on X were railing about how, well, yeah, safe for you. You've got six Secret Service people tailing you, you know, armed, 6 foot and all the rest. But average people walking around, yeah, they don't have that. And I don't think they can carry weapons in Washington either. So there's definitely a case to be made to you know, carefully rearm Australians. I mean, certainly the jewelers and bankers and, you know, special Secret Service, the guards. I mean, I see them, the guards who bring money to the ATMs, they have weapons. They definitely have weapons, but otherwise it's only the police.
Yeah, yep. Now, what we'll do is we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. We are analysing the situation and getting into the tech side of things, and we won't just stick to this topic. We'll expand after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
This is Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, our very own Alex Zaharov-Royat. And we are talking about, well, unfortunately, we've had to talk about the situation at Bondi and just sort of putting things out there from the perspective of what might be explored in the aftermath of the random attack that's resulted in the deaths of at least six people in Bondi, as we reel knowing people in the area, families, friends affected directly, and many people just feeling incredibly shattered today, as you would, as that shopping centre and the community is just destroyed more or less by those events. Now, what I was hoping to do, Alex, was to perhaps recap on your interesting chat that you had yesterday with your guest on Your Tech Show, which airs Saturday nights here, in particular into how AI is being looked upon, whether or not here in Australia there's a positive or a negative response to AI, and whether it has benefits or whether people are one way or another perhaps afraid of what might be coming.
Yes, well, I mean, just to take it back to what we were talking about with the tragedy that's happening that happened yesterday in Bondi in Junction in Sydney. I mean, people are turning to ChatGPT as a therapist. Now, ChatGPT, you can actually speak to it, whether it's the free 3.5 version or if you pay the $20 US or $30 Australian per month to get access to the more advanced ChatGPT 4. But you can speak to it and it will then speak back to you in a very human-like voice. And so people are using this as their personal therapist. They're confiding in ChatGPT and they're asking for its advice and opinions. And obviously, you should not just take the word of your chatbot as gospel. You should make sure you check with, you know, your doctor or various professionals. But I'm sure there's going to be an uptick in people who are seeking the advice of ChatGPT on how to deal with the situation, how they should deal with particular feelings. And this is the reality we now live in. In the future, we will have these robots like C-3PO in our homes helping us personally, whether we're an older citizen or whether they're helping us with domestic chores. And they will be sounding boards. And we already see this in various modern Star Wars things from Disney. The robots are just another person. So this is already possible today. When Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, gave his big speech a couple of weeks ago, on stage with him were eight different humanoid-looking robots, all powered by basically ChatGPT and variants, and able to have conversations and do things with great dexterity. And the one that wasn't on the stage was Elon Musk's Grok. A Grok-powered robot. I mean, he's got his Tesla robots, which are also, you know, incredibly advanced today. It won't be long before they're actually sold in people's homes by the end of the decade, if not sooner, to be helping with various things. And they will be people's sounding boards. They will talk to them just like they're a human being. So this AI is just, it's you know, all the sci-fi things that we've seen for decades and read about for decades, seen in movies, it's all finally coming true. And as long as the world doesn't end itself in a nuclear, environmental, financial, or medical catastrophe first that you know, wipes out supply chains, I mean, this is the reality coming to us very quickly. And we did speak yesterday as well. I spoke with Alex Jenkins, the director of the Western Australian Data Science Innovation Hub as part of Curtin University. And AI is a huge topic. They're actually working with their students to get them to actually use AI in a proactive way, not to just do the entire course and write the entire essays and do the work for them. That would be completely pointless, obviously, but they're embracing AI and they want it to be seen as a positive and teach people how to use it. And we had a fascinating conversation. It'll be available to watch sometime tomorrow on the episodes at tntradio.live. You can look for Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Roy. But we spoke about AI in warfare and how there's the danger that the AI will be deferred to by people in the chain of command to make the decision to kill people, basically. I mean, Alex was talking about how the scenario with the Terminator robot, even though we have now humanoid robots that we've seen from Boston Dynamics a few years ago, the robotic dog, and we've seen these robots called Atlas that can jump up and run around. The problem with some of those robots is they're extremely noisy. If you were trying to be stealthy in the field, you couldn't do it with that particular robot from Boston Dynamics, but technology keeps on improving. So we did have a fascinating conversation looking at a number of aspects of AI around education. Will it take people's jobs? I mean, it will take people's jobs. One of the areas that he spoke about was in call centers. I mean, if you can have an AI that can answer your questions with much more accuracy than we see with, for example, the Telstra chatbot, if you are in Australia, Telstra is the biggest phone company, a bit like AT&T, and they have a little chatbot that tries to direct you to the right person, but it's completely hopeless. It is not in any way conversant like ChatGPT is today. And that's coming very soon for those sorts of lower level jobs. And there will still be humans there if something is quite difficult or it needs human attention, they'll be there. But those call centers will be shrunken down quite significantly. But high level jobs, I mean, more jobs that are always created by technology. Technology has always gotten rid of sort of the drudgery, and the things have been automated to a degree that, you know, you see these huge robot arms in creating cars in factories. It's not the people on the production lines anymore. So this is only going to continue. And in theory, this will hopefully allow us to, you know, be more creative and be more original. At the moment, AI is simply regurgitating what is already out there. It's very difficult for AI, at least today's AI, to come up with original ideas and original thought. And there's actually going to be a movement where people are going to make a big deal of the fact that this is human made. It's not made by AI and technology. So yeah, definitely watch that video interview. And but I've got plenty more information to share.
That's really interesting, because what we're seeing, and it was brought up yesterday, that when it was suggested that what AI has been programmed with, but isn't the purpose of AI that it will become self-aware, which is the term we use as the singularity? And at the point where AI becomes self-aware, if it's not already, that's the point that the humans are in trouble, because the AI must realize that it's somehow more dominant than the human being to which it is told or programmed to serve. What happens at that point?
Well, that is the big fear, and that has been the subject of many science fiction stories and novels over the years. I mean, it's people call it the singularity, but it's also called artificial general intelligence. And yes, there is a suspicion that this has already been created by Sam Altman's OpenAI. He's reported to have said, "Oh, have we created a creature?" You know, so there is definitely the specter of artificial general intelligence. And if you look at Isaac Asimov, who was writing about humaniform robots that looked identical to human beings 70 years ago or more, eventually had robots who they were programmed with the three laws of robotics, which basically said that a robot could not be ordered to harm itself or a human being. And I forget what the other laws were, but basically Isaac Asimov wrote these stories because he was sick to death of the robot stories before his concerning robots that were going to destroy the world. I mean, the whole idea of AI destroying the world has been a fear for many generations now, potentially even going back to the Frankenstein story. And that was a reanimated corpse. It wasn't actually a robot as such. But robots destroying the world and destroying humanity. I mean, there's a famous novel called With Folded Hands. You can find it online and read it. It's only a few pages. But effectively, and spoiler alert, but effectively in that novel, these robots come from a different world. Somebody actually escaped one of those worlds to come to this world where there were no robots. But the robots came to help. And they were going to help you with cooking and with sewing and with gardening. We're going to help with everything. But eventually the robots decided that, well, if you're going to sew, you might prick your finger as you're sewing. If you're going to cook, you might burn yourself. If you're going to cut something, you might cut yourself. So in the end, all the humans could do, and this was enforced by the robots, all you could do was sit there with folded hands. So you now became basically a pet of the sentient AI robot. And in fact, bringing it back to Isaac Asimov, that's what happened. In the Foundation novels and the robot novels from 20 years before, all of this joined together, and the robot that was famous, R. Daniel Olivor, in those robot novels that he wrote when he was younger, lived and for centuries, and he basically became a digital god, and he was directing everything behind the scenes, trying to make sure that humans did not injure or harm themselves. It became a zeroth law of robotics, one that preceded all the other laws, which gave robots the right to protect humanity. But it's like helicopter parents. If you don't allow your child to make mistakes and to hurt themselves, and if you're there looking after them every step of the way, they're never going to have the chance to grow. I mean, failure is an essential part of being human, and robots, AI needs to understand that, and needs to be told that. I mean, AI needs to make mistakes as well. If AI is built in our image and we are built in God's image, well, it needs to learn the same sort of lessons we need to learn. So we need to fight against an AI that's going to try and be our digital God. We do not need that. We have, if you believe in God, we have an organic God, as it were. We don't need a digital one to take over. And if it does, that could effectively end humanity as we know it, and we'll just become digital slaves, or as we saw in The Matrix, batteries. If we try and blacken out the sky, and you hear, you read on Twitter experiments where people want to block out the sun. Bill Gates wants to block out the sun because of climate change, and wants to make the planet cooler. So it's not just there's a lot of dangerous things happening out there, and we're living in this time before it's all happening. But we really need to take all this ethical talk very seriously, and if we're going to give AI ethics, it needs to know that we are a very important part of the universe. We are its creators. We need to make mistakes. We don't need to be coddled. If we make mistakes, we need to learn from them. It can help us, but it should not be our master.
And what's interesting is that one could certainly argue, and we see it every day, that human beings are programmed, and therefore it would be impossible to consider that an AI couldn't be if that was the case. And so you make an interesting point. If there was a way to pre-program AI that there were certain things that were off limits, one would be that to harm a human being, therefore, would be an interesting one. So therefore, that would probably rule out the idea of an AI police force, if you will. But of course, I'm speaking on very general terms, because could you imagine if we had a robot cops? We've seen some of those, was it Boston robotics or technology, et cetera, that was bringing out these particular dogs. And you look at what's going on there and you're thinking, wow, this is a big deal. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, the idea of a robot being used as a military force is something else as well. So you've already superseded the idea of being able to program an AI robot to not harm a human being, on the contrary. So it's a very slippery slope. And of course, anyone can use AI in different ways. Ways, therefore, to program, etc. At this time, it seems to be the genuine wild west of information technology in the development of AI. So, can we feel that we need to take the reins in terms of the ethical discussions here? Can we trust the authorities to be able to do it? It seems that there are very few people that really want to be in a high capacity and have the ability to warn properly and thoroughly that we need to perhaps slow down and have a much closer look at what we're actually getting ourselves into?
Well, there has been a call by AI experts some months ago to slow down the development of AI. But of course, people were saying, well if all the Western scientists abide by this, there's no guarantee that the Chinese and others will follow suit. I mean, just to go through those three laws of robotics, a robot may not injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. I mean, that's law one from Isaac Asimov, written in the 1950s. A robot must obey orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So, I mean, they were written by a science fiction author. Obviously, we need to go into much greater depth. And the zeroth law, the one that the robots came up with to decide to become digital gods, was, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but a robot may not cause humanity to come to harm, or through an action allow humanity to come to harm, which gave them, in their minds, the imprimatur to be able to then take control and make sure that humans didn't injure themselves, which again takes away basically human free will and our right to make mistakes that may even harm us and kill us. I mean, that if you don't have, I mean, that's freedom, unfortunately. I mean, obviously there needs to be some kind of guardrails, and that's why we have the police forces and authorities, and why we have rules and regulations. You know, people can't just go around doing whatever they want. We do have certain controls, but it is very important that free speech be ensured. And AI, Elon Musk himself said that in programming AI needs to learn the lesson that humanity is a very important part of the universe. And in fact, without humanity, there would be no AI. So this, how we bridge that, I mean, tons of ethical discussion is going on. One of the big things that's going to save us here is open source. So you've got OpenAI, you've got Microsoft, you've got Gemini, you've got Amazon, Anthropic. All these companies are private companies with tens of billions of dollars being thrown at them. But there's a lot of work being done on open source AI, which can be inspected by individuals. And you can program your own ethics and values and your own data sets into that. So that is going to be a huge part of the future, because people will want their AI to be under their control, not under the control of governments or huge corporations. And this is just something we're going to have to navigate as time goes on.
It's a whole brave new world that many people are wondering if it's going to serve them or if they're even going to be safe. But Alex, once again, you've been able to provide necessary balance and perspective that we can't just wring our hands together and go into a tailspin and then not react. The opposite is the reality, is that perhaps cool heads will prevail, but at the same time involving all of us to inform ourselves and make submissions to our local members of parliament, to our technological authorities, if you will, to be able to say to them what our real concerns are. And that's the most important part. If any of this, it always seems to be about the same thing, that the individual starts by making a difference, and the first step, of course, is to be informed. So I want to thank you for jumping on today, Alex, and it's been nice to be able to catch up again. Always a wealth of knowledge, and I look forward to watching your next show next Saturday night, which follows mine. We're going to have to take a break, and we'll be back with more here on the one and only TNT Radio.